a weekly radio program on WFHB that focuses on issues in Indiana's prison system and beyond.
I'm Emma Johnson.
And I'm Mia Beach.
And we're your hosts for this program. Behind the prison walls, a message is called a kite. Whispered words, a note passed hand to hand, or requests submitted to guards for medical care. Illicit or not, sending a kite means trusting that other people will bear it farther along until it reaches its destination. On KiteLine, we hope to pass along those words across the prison walls.
In this episode, we'll get an update on Sadiq Hasan's hunger strike. We'll hear a statement from those calling for a September 9th national prison strike. We'll also get an update on the proposed prison in Letcher County, Kentucky. We will briefly start discussing prison labor, a topic we expect to be covering much more of in upcoming episodes in response to the national prison strike, which starts today. Let's start out with some news about Sadiq Hasan.
Sadiq Abdullah Hasan is currently on hunger strike along with two other Muslim prisoners at Ohio State Penitentiary. When he was first thrown in the hole, other prisoners were on that hunger strike as well. He is now out of the hole, but he was tried by the Rules Infraction Board and found guilty of completely fabricated accusations that are absurd on their face. And it was just a pretext to deny him phone and email access because he was using those to outreach to organizations and media about September 9th. And so he's got a 30-day restriction now. His lawyer is working on getting a temporary restraining order against that to get him that access back, and is also going to sue on a civil rights lawsuit for freedom of speech and for undue retaliation. Basically, what happened is there is a state employee, imam, who is like a Muslim prayer leader, who the DOC hires to go into these prisons that go into OSP and Trumbull nearby. And this imam has had issues in the past. He's not real well liked. He's not affiliated. He's kind of freelance, and he's not closely affiliated with any Muslim organizations. So he doesn't stand up for Muslim rights, which makes him a perfect candidate for the DOC or the DRC here in Ohio to bring in and do this job. And it also turns out that also means that he can be turned into a snitch and that he can lie on people. And so he, we're assuming under encouragement or pressure from the guards, made up a completely absurd story that Hasan was repeatedly asking him and pressuring him to wear a suicide vest into the prison on September 9th, which doesn't make sense in many different levels. That's not what September 9th is about at all. There is no trust between Hasan and this imam. In fact, this imam had, in a few years ago, tried to get Hasan removed from the list because Hasan understands Islam, he would say better, but at least differently than this imam. And so they sometimes argue in the class, and the imam sees him as a threat. And so the idea that Hasan would trust him to be encouraged to do something like this doesn't make sense. The idea that he would, on July 22nd is when this supposedly happened, but the imam didn't report it to the DRC people until August 1st, and then the Ohio State Highway Patrol came to interrogate Hasan on the 2nd, and he was like, I have no idea what you're talking about, I'm not talking to you anymore because you're law enforcement and you're talking about blowing up buildings and I have nothing to do with anything like that. I'm going back to my cell now. And they still didn't put him in the hole until like 7 days later after that. So if they want us to think that these are serious charges and that this is a real thing, if Hasan is trying to organize a terrorist strike against the prison, why is he allowed to have all the access that he has for that long? You know, so that clearly there's a huge disjunct in this timeline. And then there's other things, like there's just a number of different ways in which the process has been violating their own rules and also violating the laws of common sense. How the Rules Infraction Board works is it's like a court, except it's not like a court because you don't need any actual evidence and there's no defense attorneys or anything like that. It's just you go stand in front of a person and plead your case and whatever. Basically, some of the actual staff of OSP were like, yeah, we don't really believe this imam either, but we need to find you guilty because it's your word against his and you're a prisoner and we just don't believe prisoners. Period. So it's like pretty bold, obvious ridiculousness. Because of their processes and because of their bureaucracy, they can do that. And the only thing that Hasan can do officially is appeal the decision and then appeal all the way up to the top of the DRC, and then he can sue them. And so that process is going to take longer than the 30-day restriction, and so that's hopeless. And so instead, he and some of the other prisoners are going on hunger strike, have been on hunger strike for 14 days, demanding that the conduct report be thrown out, and that the imam be fired and replaced with a real Muslim faith leader, not somebody who's going to perpetuate anti-Muslim stereotypes within their prison and make up lies and basically do the bidding of I don't know who in the administration, I don't know at what level. He's working with staff to try to frame Hassan, but it's clear that there's some coordination between staff who have it out for Hassan and this imam, and that there's no trust in that relationship anymore. So they do not have a faith leader for Muslims in OSP right now. We're doing call-in campaigns right now. We're encouraging people to write letters to the DOC and make calls. You can go to the freeohiomovement.org website, or to supportprisonresistance.net, or to lucasvilleamnesty.org. All of those are different websites that are going to be continuously putting out information about this and anything else that's going on with these kinds of issues.
Whole Foods Market, the grocery chain known for its high-quality food and high prices, has announced that it will stop selling products made with prison labor. Whole Foods said that it has sold tilapia, trout, and goat cheese produced by Colorado inmates since 2011 or earlier. According to a Whole Foods spokesperson, the program was a way to, quote, help people get back on their feet and eventually become contributing members of society, unquote. Through Colorado Correctional Industries, a division of the state's Department of Corrections, inmates who volunteered for the program made between 74 cents to $4 a day working for Whole Foods suppliers. Haystack Mountain Goat Dairy uses herds maintained by inmates and sells to Whole Foods and other markets, restaurants, and cheese shops. The decision to stop selling products made with prison labor came after a prison reform activist organized a protest at a Whole Foods store in Houston.
Today is September 9th, which marks the first day of the national prison strike. We introduced the September 9th strike in the last episode, but this week, we want to read the words from the prisoners who called it themselves. This is an abridged version of a text written by the Free Alabama Movement. Let the crops rot in the fields. A call for new strategy in the national movement against mass incarceration and prison slavery. The new strategy, using direct economic action to effect change. When determining the best strategy to challenge mass incarceration and prison slavery, it is essential that we step back and take a look at the entire system. We must identify the fundamentals of what makes the system work and why the system exists. Once we thoroughly understand the underpinnings of the system of mass incarceration, we can begin to see why the old strategies and tactics have not and will not bring about any meaningful change. Then we can begin developing a new strategy that attacks mass incarceration at its core. Just like the institution of chattel slavery, mass incarceration is, in essence, an economic system which uses human beings as its nuts and bolts. Therefore, our new approach must be economically based and must be focused on the factors of production, the people being forced into the slave labor. Our three-part strategy. 1. Organize prison shutdowns at prisons with major economic industries, tag plants, fleet services, food distribution centers, agriculture, etc. 2. Call for a nationwide leaflet campaign, protests, and boycotts of McDonald's restaurants, which is one of the major corporations that has a national presence and that benefits from prison slavery, in addition to others like Walmart, Victoria's Secret, AT&T, Wells Fargo Banks, Wendy's, GEO, CCA, private prison companies that are listed on the NYSE, and more. 3. Having our families, friends, supporters, activists, and others holding protests at the prisons where the people are mass incarcerated and oppressed. Consolidating our resources. Having our families, friends, activists, and supporters all galvanized at a select prison to engage in protests and to show support for the people on the inside who are being oppressed. This strategic move is just as important as the strikes because it brings all of the people together who oppose mass incarceration and prison slavery. We can't have a unified movement against mass incarceration and prison slavery if we are in a long-distance relationship with our supporters, organizers, activists, and others who support our cause. We have to get everyone organized at the prisons so that we can confront the system at the site of its oppression at the prisons. By having our supporters in one location for each state, we maximize our resources, increase our strength in numbers, and we move with a unified front. Very little can be done by the state at this point, except to meet our demands. The protests against police brutality are taking place at police stations. The workers at Walmart are protesting at Walmart. The Occupy Wall Street movement protested on Wall Street. Therefore, the movement and fight against mass incarceration must take place at the prisons. The old way. Now let's take a look at the familiar strategies of movements against mass incarceration and prison slavery and see why we need a change in strategy. 1. Hunger strikes. The demonstrations put on by the men and women in California, in Georgia, Washington State, and Texas showed us all that with leadership and unity, we can defeat mass incarceration with the right strategy. But we also learned that while we did see progress in some areas, it has a minimal impact on the system of mass incarceration. We have to strategize with the understanding that we are dealing with modern-day slave profiteers. These businessmen will gladly let us die from starvation so long as their assembly lines keep moving. Leasing convicts to private businesses made a tidy fortune for both state and local governments, especially after slaves were emancipated. In 1878, 73% of Alabama's entire state revenue came from prison labor. Reconstruction-era plantation owners, though, were hardly incentivized to care about their charges. When any of their starving workers died, they simply asked the state for new ones, at no cost to their bottom line. The net effect on the bottom line from a hunger strike is negligible. This is not going to get the response we need, so we have to do more. 2. Marches. Sure, the traditional marches bring attention to issues and they bring people together, but they simply don't bring about much results. If we must march, then let's march at the prisons where mass incarceration and prison slavery are taking place. As I said above, when the people protest against police brutality in Ferguson, Memphis, and California, they're doing it at the police stations. When Ban the Boat activists protested in support of Palestine, they protested at the ports. We have to ask ourselves, if we are protesting against mass incarceration and prison slavery, then why aren't we doing it at the prisons where economic strength can be felt? Just like we saw in California with the hunger strike, the families and supporters show their support at the prison. The people in the prisons can see that support and receive the boost in morale that will be needed to carry this thing through. The meeting place is at the prisons. 3. Letter writing, petitions, etc. Letter writing campaigns and making phone calls are still effective, but we have to change who we are targeting and what we are attempting to communicate. Letters and calls help when written to alternative media sources and other activists, organizations, and supporters of our movement to let them know that we are striking so that we can inform other prisons and other states so that they can join in also. Letters and petitions also help when we target companies that are using prison-made goods to let them know that we will boycott them if they don't stop. And it also helps to contact their customers and let them know that they are purchasing slave-made goods. But the old habit of writing politicians and commissioners won't work in today's world and just haven't produced meaningful results. It's time to find a new target audience and bring attention to new strategies and a new message. Is the current movement against mass incarceration spread too thin? In FAM, we strategize around bringing all of the forces and resources together from each individual state into one collective whole. Groups that are fighting against the death penalty, solitary confinement, children in prison, voting rights, mentally ill people in prison, free labor, disenfranchisement, parole reform, and a few other issues. We will address all of these issues in our Freedom Bill, so everyone and every organization that is fighting against these issues should all be fighting together. We must let the crops rot in the field if we aren't receiving benefit of the harvest. Let the crops rot in the field is a proven strategy that was passed down to us from our ancestors from the slave plantations and that was used to disrupt the economics of the field. The harvest of the planter season was reaped when the crops were picked from the field and sold on the open market. When the slave master had invested all that he owned into his next crop, prison factories, the slaves would wait until just before the harvest and rebel against the slave system by going on strike and causing the crops to rot in the field. This tactic would completely ruin the slave master's investment. While these crops were rotting in the field, the slave master would come down from his big house, make nice, and beg the slaves to go back to work. But when that didn't work, The slave master, just like the modern prison commissioners and wardens, would then result to threats and violence. But those determined for their freedom would resist and fight to the end. In the end, when their crops were left to rot in the field, the slave master would sometimes lose his plantation if he had used it as a collateral to secure a loan from the bank to plant. This is what happens to a prison system that is built upon the exploitation and free labor of the people incarcerated. When the laborers stop working, the free labor's prison system collapses because there isn't any revenue coming in to finance the system of 30,000 people in Alabama, 23,000 in Mississippi, 160,000 in California, or 2.5 million nationwide who still must be fed, still must be provided medical care, still must have lights, water, and basic hygiene. These obligations and costs don't stop, but the means to pay for them, the revenue that is produced by our labor, stops when we stop. In 2014, Alabama had a $400 million budget to run its prisons, which is paid by the sale of the products and services that are manufactured by the slave labor from the people incarcerated. All told, Alabama is making anywhere from $2 to $3 billion each year from our labor, fines, fees, canteen, phone calls, etc., while over $500 billion is made nationwide off of prison slave labor. If we are to end mass incarceration and prison slavery, which only those caught up in the slave system can do, then we must unify nationwide from inside of these prisons, and we must stop our labor and let the crops rot in the field. For updates on the National Prison Strike, you can go to supportprisonerresistance.net or itsgoingdown.org.
And now, a brief update on the proposed prison in Letcher County, Kentucky.
In May, the Bureau of Prisons was forced to re-release the environmental impact statement, which opened up this window to file comments, and which we filed new comments. We mobilized people on the outside to file comments, and even more than we did previously, we coordinated getting comments from prisoners on the inside. We did a mailing throughout the region, throughout the Southeast, federal prisons. We got a lot of responses from prisoners. We won't know exactly how many, although some sent us copies. And once we get to review the public records, we'll be able to see how many prisoners participated. But we were more explicit in that round of comments that prisoners should have been informed. Basically, any prisoner in the federal system is at risk of being transferred to this facility built on top of mountaintop removal coal mining site, close proximity to a sludge impoundment. Their health risks and dangers associated with that, with the quality of water that they'd be forced to use. And so prisoners have a stake and be a part of this public process. So we raised that issue, and we're kind of waiting now to see how the BOP responds to it.
I know there's some members of the Letcher Governance Project that are interested in looking at this from a racial justice standpoint, because statistically most people in prison are people of color, so they're potentially interested in getting some other organizations to participate and see the site and discuss why this is an issue, not just for Letcher County, but for the entire justice system. And so it really does come down to prison abolition, because ultimately all of the prisons are racist, and that's starting to get linked into this one particular prison. Also on a local level, I know there's been a FOIA filed for communications between Hal Rogers and the BOP, so we are waiting to get that to see just how buddy-buddy they have been and how involved he's been in this process, which we expect is pretty involved given that he's had the other three prisons in Eastern Kentucky put in during his terms, and he really pushed for those as well. There's also been a road paved up to the prison site as of late. We do not yet have proof of who paid for that or why it was ordered, but there's been no record of decision yet, so the Bureau of Prisons is not allowed to pave that road or do any work on that prison site yet, so we'll see.
Because they haven't issued a record of decision or a new revised environmental impact statement, a lot of it's speculation. There is, there's people that are following the news about this and at a local level and hearing what's being talked about. And so some of those spread a little bit as rumors about what's coming next. And some of those rumors have proven to be true in the past. So, that's what we're working with in terms of those updates. And the word has it that the BOP is sweating and looking to revise the environmental impact statement again to avoid impacting local land owners who have spoken up and been vocal. So it's possible they'll have to revise the EIS in order to do that, and that'll give a new window for commenting. When that happens, we don't know, but it'll give it's about 45 days of time for people to submit new comments, to fill the record with new reports and studies. In particular, we want to continue showing how the coal industry has impacted the people on the land in this area, which poses a threat. In particular, people are stuck, warehoused, and forced using this water without options of cleaning the water or testing the water sufficiently So I wish there was a more explicit update, but the good news is that the Bureau of Prisons cannot access this almost $500 million in money without finishing the environmental impact statement. So our fight to keep that at bay has kept that money out of their hands, and we want to continue that as long as we can.
Something really encouraging about this revised EIS that they'll have to put out is it's unprecedented. It's never happened before. No one's ever fought them this hard, where they've had to revise it twice. So I think that means we're doing good work. It's going well.
There's a couple spots online. The Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons that's been doing organizing at a nationwide level is fighttoxicprisons.org. And so there's regular updates and background information. Also, a lot of information has come out through prisonecology.org.
To get more information on the Letcher Governance Project, you just go to Facebook and search Letcher Governance Project.
Kiteline wants your feedback. You can reach us via email at kitelineradio@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Are you someone affected by the prison system? If you or a family member have a story you want shared on the program, please email us at kitelineradio@gmail.com. We also welcome you to record something for us to put on the air. To record a message for the show or to send a message to a family member or loved one who's currently behind the walls of an Indiana prison, please call 812-269-2512 and record your message. You can also write to us at Kiteline Radio, P.O. Box 2422, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. So visit our website at kitelineradio.noblogs.org. Kiteline is solely responsible for the content here on the show. The views expressed on Kiteline do not necessarily express the opinions of WFHB, its contributors, or any affiliates airing this program. This has been Kiteline on WFHB. Join us every Friday evening at 5:30 for news stories and discussion regarding prison and its impact on our communities. Thanks for listening.